It's the 1920s, and prohibition is the law of the land. Chicago gangs are at war, and mobsters are being executed in the street. And they're all played by children. We saw Bugsy Malone,
so you know what that means.
Now it's time for How to Discarade. We're gonna have a good time, celebrate some failure, not just be a hater, cause you know you won that. How to Discarade. Let's wallow in the mediocrity of subpar art. Perhaps we'll find the answer to the question, how did this get made?
Hello, people of Earth, and welcome to How Did This Get Made? I am Tall John Shear, and boy, oh boy, we got a movie for you today. Bugsy Malone, Scott Baio, Jodie Foster, both in their very early teens, and it's exactly what I just mentioned. It is a full-on gangster story done by children. I don't even want to reveal more than that because I think my co-hosts today are going to break down every part of this insane film with me with much glee. And we have a very special guest today. No June Diane Raphael, but we do have Mr. Jason Mantzoukas and Miss Jessica St. Clair. Or I should say Mrs. Jessica St. Clair.
Ms.
Mrs. Jessica.
Ms. Paul. Ms. Although I am married to myself.
Jessica, I am so excited that you are here for this one because I feel like your take on this is needed.
I'm curious, St. Clair, had you ever seen this movie or did you know about this movie by any chance?
So this is my thinking. I get the name Bugsy Malone, okay? And I, of course, I don't Google it or to find it until the very last minute. And I think, hey, this is great. I love Warren Beatty. Yep. I can't wait to see this film.
I thought that might be the thing.
But I also thought that the Warren Beatty movie was Saving Jessica Rabbit. I have put both of those together.
Wait, I'm sorry. A movie called Saving Jessica Rabbit? Where Tom Hanks has to go behind enemy lines before D-Day in order to rescue Jessica Rabbit?
That's
searching, the shirt.
That searching is the, for Jessica
so many. So searching, many. Searching for Jessica searching. Rabbit. Searching where a young chess prodigy has to figure out
is it,
how to work
stole,
with Jessica Rabbit.
Who stole Jessica Rabbit?
Who
is that
stole
what it is?
Jessica Rabbit? Let's keep working on this. What else you got? Who stole Jessica Rabbit? What do you think the plot is? I guess somebody stole Jessica Rabbit. We got to find her.
Yes, somebody is in love with Jessica Rabbit. Wait, what is the movie? Well, and I know you have a picture of yourself with it. Don't you, Paul? Don't you like, didn't you do a cutout? What? Don't you have a picture
of a
picture.
Yes,
as a child?
I do have a picture of myself with Jessica Rabbit from a movie that I'm not going to tell you the
name
of.
Wait, what do you think the title of that movie is, though? Let's think about it for a second.
Jessica
Romancing the Jessica Rabbit.
Romancing? Is it? I'm in love
romancing
with
Jessica Rabbit.
No, it's Romancing the Stone. You're just taking other movie beginnings
but
and
she's
plugging
so close.
Who killed Jessica Rabbit?
Oh, you're getting so much
now
closer.
Now we're getting somewhere. Who and killed Jessica
who
Rabbit?
Who kissed Jessica Rabbit?
Who kissed Jessica Stein?
Never been kissed Jessica Rabbit style.
Never been
Guys,
kissed Jessica Rabbit.
That's not what this movie is about. This is why I come on and people are like, she never talked about the actual movie. I watched this fucking awful movie, but in my mind, I had put all of those movies together.
I'm so much more excited though that you thought that's what you were getting, and instead you got the insano fever dream that is this movie.
I was so upset when I saw what this was, because
the movie you were trying to think of, St. Clair, is Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
Roger Rabbit. Roger Rabbit.
You're
but
right.
Jessica Rabbit is
a character.
It.
Yes. That is the Kathleen Turner femme fatale.
They wouldn't put the woman in the title because that was a different time. But yes.
Also, she's not the crux of the story, but sure.
I mean, like,
she was not framed.
Also, it's so fucked up people wanted to fuck a cartoon rabbit. That's not right.
No, I'm sorry. Jessica, she's not a rabbit.
Yeah, she is.
No, she's a human.
She's a human being. She's a cartoon.
Yeah, she was married to Roger Rabbit.
Married name.
I thought she had long
She's a kind of a Marilyn stand-in. Like she's
somebody put a picture of Jessica Rabbit in the chat, please.
Yeah. I mean, not that Jess will know how to open the chat as we are running.
Kathleen Turner voices her. She's like a Marilyn Monroe-esque, like bombshell lounge singer.
And she's fucking
character.
A rabbit. She's fucking. Well,
she's married to a rabbit. Assume they fuck, but why? They're in love. They're in love. Let's not shame them for their love.
Yeah, I mean that. Like, that's cartoon
that's
world
all fucked
logic.
Up, guys.
You know.
Okay. Well, it's a little less disgusting that. She's a sexy woman, but still, she shouldn't be. Okay. Yeah. Okay. But she's okay. She's very
good
looking.
Do you see why maybe young boys at that era were like, wait a minute, what?
Yeah.
But that's a lot less weird than if that was a rabbit. I thought she had rabbit ears.
That's what
red
I'm saying.
Hair,
she's not a rabbit. Yes.
Not
a
rabbit. That's fine. Yes.
Okay. Sorry.
Hashtag not a rabbit.
Okay.
And it's okay to be, sexually attracted to cartoon characters, whatever, you know, whatever gets you there. So
what I thought I was getting. And then I saw like Scott Baio and I was like, wait, hold on. And then because when I saw Jodie Foster, I was like, okay, she was in Bugsy with Warren Beatty. That makes sense.
Even until that point, you thought you were what? Because I get it. Again, just to be clear, the Warren Beatty movie, you are right, is called Bugsy. So that mistake I 100% can understand.
And then I thought that Scott Baio was possibly playing a young Warren Beatty, and we were seeing kind of him
flashback.
Starting out his gangster days as a young
sure,
kid.
Baby Bugsy.
And you thought that.
Bugsy. Baby Bugsy.
Baby Bugsy for life.
I do want to just maybe step back. I want to step back because before we see Scott Baio, we see a brutal execution. And I will say this movie, every time they kill a child,
it's so upsetting.
It's so upsetting. It is.
It's with cream pies?
Yes.
Yes.
And the kids are always visibly alive?
They're not, though, because they are not alive. Like, once they get hit with the cream pie, they cease to exist in the film. Like, they
cease to exist. It's as if they're out, you know, in a game of tag or something. But they don't die. They still are, like, you know, the kid who gets shot with the cream or the splurge guns at the beginning, he's still blinking and kind of like, oh, you got me. But he's not like,
I assumed he was dead. I assumed, in this world, being cream pied is getting dead, except for the end when everybody is like,
it's a food
cream pied, and then everyone comes back
to life. I really think we got to stop saying cream pied. We got to stop saying cream pied only because I don't think St. Clair knows the other definition.
Well, I mean, look, this movie is very dangerous with the terms.
Here's what's crazy. And I'm about to say something that is maybe the most controversial thing I've ever said on this podcast. Alan Parker made this movie.
Yes.
Alan Parker made Mississippi is Burning. He made Mississippi Burning, rather. The Commitments, Birdie, Fame. He's a very well-known director. This movie, I'm going to say, is as insane and batshit crazy as it is well made.
No, that's
it's like
what
a
are you
good,
talking about?
It is well shot. There are long oners in this movie that are interesting when you're wandering through. Like, it is shot like the gangster movies of the 30s and 40s that it is trying to ape in a way that I found there is no coverage. There's very little close-ups. It's all done in mediums and wide shots, especially to accommodate dance numbers with teenagers that are lip syncing. I was like, this should be so much more of a disaster than
mind. Here's what I'll say, because I don't disagree with what you're saying in as far as like the direction of it is good, but the acting of it is.
And that's the Don the director.
Bananas.
Because guess what?
It's crazy.
Because I felt like I was in a junior high school auditorium in Westchester, New York, watching, you know, again, these are kids that have been sent away to theater camp. Okay. So they've had the access to, you know, French Woods, you know, they're able to go and work on their craft, but they do not have the talent. Jodie Foster steps on screen, she lights it up. Every time she's in you see it. She's
amazing.
So new.
She's incredible.
And she's barely in the movie. She's barely
in
the movie.
A couple of kids like that. I think there's a couple of kids who are who are incredibly charismatic to look at. The kid who's playing Fat Is it Fat Sam?
Fat Sam,
I think, is doing great work. He's basically, the movie is essentially a kid version of Miller's Crossing.
Yeah,
and
sure.
He's like, he's John Polito. You know, like, it is so funny to me. It's Once Upon a Time in America. It's Miller's Crossing. It's Scarface. They're biting off of such interesting stuff, even though I know this movie came before some of those other movies. They're doing such an interesting job in aping those kind of movies and making, like, the cars or bikes, everything is built to scale.
Yes.
Which was really funny. Yeah. They're doing Prohibition jokes, but instead about like sarsaparilla and sure. stuff like that. I was like, I'm enjoying, because I'd never seen this movie.
Yeah, I saw it a lot as a kid. When I was a kid, it was on HBO all the time, and I don't remember a single thing about it, but I remember loving it because it was kids all in the movie. Like, to me, that was like the thing that was like, wow, it's a movie full of
that
kids.
That is interesting. But here's the deal. Like, for instance, and I say this with love to Fat Sam, mm-hmm. he was doing too much hand work, too much gesturing. I feel like the right director could have massaged that. Okay. I worked with Fred Savage, shot the entire first season of Best Friends Forever. And if you want to see a guy working with children, okay, and getting the best nuanced performance out of him, that's Fred, because he used to be.
Right,
you know,
he knows. Was, Alan Parker yeah, doesn't know how sure. to do that. I want to play a clip of Fat Sal's intro because... or Fat Sam.
He has raw talent.
Fat
Sal, I'm not saying he doesn't have raw talent.
Is Turtle's sandwich shop, I believe.
Yeah, wait, Fat Sal's is a very good sandwich shop. I like it a lot.
What have you got to say for yourselves, you bunch of dummies? Call yourselves hoodlums? You disgrace to your profession, you hear me? Disgrace. And most of all, disgrace to me. Fat Sam. And we all know who's behind this. Don't we?
Sure do, boss.
Don't need a head full of brains to know that. Do you?
Certainly not, boss.
So who is it, you dummies? Tell me. Who?
The damn boss.
Don't dare mention that name in the song.
Hey, take it easy.
Here's what I'll say. If you are not enjoying this movie, the thing that I loved watching, to Jessica's point, was the overacting in the background. I mean, these kids were doing, like... head turns.
They're
like,
trying their best.
They're doing so much. There's so much. And the level of acting between them is so scattershot because the kid who plays like Dapper Dan, I love the way he held himself.
Incredible.
Really
He's like
composed.
Andy Garcia. Didn't you feel like he had a really subtle, like,
okay,
I felt like that guy had a backstory.
Yes. There's nothing better in this movie than little kids with little mustaches.
I mean,
it was making every time it made me laugh.
I wanted a little kid with a bald spot, too. I wanted
that would have been amazing. That would have been amazing. Everything, the cops were amazing. Like, here's the thing. What I felt like was really cool was these kids had clearly been shown all of the movies.
Yes.
That they were aping. And they fucking go
They committed.
For it, you
they
know?
Commit 100%.
Some go
do.
For
because,
it.
Because, like, Jodie Foster...
No, you're right. They're not all good at it, but they're all going for
well, like,
it.
Well, like,
that's right.
Some are affecting a voice and a cadence. Others simply are not. And when you see somebody like Jodie Foster, and again, it just shows you, like, pure star power. She is the whole deal. Like, more
You can't take
of
your eyes
her.
Off her.
No.
She is as good... as a child, as she was, as she is as an adult. I really like.
Well,
I
she's mean, also yeah. She's also doing that thing where she's playing like the Marcia Gay Harden role in Miller's Crossing, where she's the kind of not quite the femme fatale, but she is like she's the girlfriend of Fat Sam, or you know, but she loves Bugsy Malone and all this kind of stuff, and she's communicating all of that inside of them being 13 years old. All of the complexity of that type of a emotional journey is inside of a performance by children inside of a children's movie that. Is mostly a food fight.
Jodie Foster shot Taxi Driver before this movie. So she's coming in from Taxi Driver to this.
Yeah. Yeah. And bringing, by the way, but good lesson all the actors out there. You can be in the craziest fucking shit, but if you deliver this kind of nuanced performance, it leaps off the screen, except for when she was forced to lip sync to an adult woman singing.
All of the singing.
This whole
I had no idea this was a musical. I had no idea this was a musical. And the musical numbers, to be clear, are all sung by adult voices, which is bizarre.
Primarily, they're sung by Paul Williams, which is a very weird. I want to play a clip of Jodie Foster.
Who's Paul Williams? Who's Paul Williams?
Paul Williams is the one who sings the opening song, but he's kind of like a known.
He's like a 70s era songwriter who was also like a frequent like talk show and game show guest. You probably will recognize him as like a personality of the 70s.
Like Hollywood Squares. But why was he did not more than one song? He pretty much does all the
songs that are not women. And that's why, like, even when that little kid who's like wants to be the tap dancer
that's
is singing. Or
craziest voice coming out of that kid I've ever heard of.
The biggest heartbreak for me in this movie was that I thought that kid was going to get his own tap dance number. And he never did. Give this kid some room to tap. I assumed he was gonna like have like his third act kind of finally gets to do his thing, and he never did, and that really bummed me out. That was my one note. Everything else I loved.
That kid is brutally murdered. He runs
they
to
all
hide
are.
I mean, they all are.
They all he are. Run. No, if you go by the rule that if you get cream pied, you die, then everybody is dead.
Well,
in the
that's
movie.
Why I thought that the like that's why I thought like there was something really sweet about him running into that broom closet, and you're like, at least the tap dance kid gets to like save the day, like he's gonna live, and then maybe he'll tap dance on all their graves. But no, he opens the door. And then, because these kids get
right
face shots. I mean, they are getting
shots. Yes. Yeah. I kept thinking to myself, like, even in a mafia movie, you don't see somebody's face.
Everybody's getting face shots and cream.
I mean, I'm surprised there was no dirt pipe milkshakes in here. but like, there was, I mean, there is.
But here's the thing. This movie, I'm not even kidding. This movie, there are sections of this movie that are long tracking oneers. Like, remember the one where the news report goes out and it tracks horizontally along a series of phone banks, and people in different languages are reporting. The kids from different countries are reporting the same news. That could be from a Wes Anderson movie. Like, you could
it's
tell
beautifully
me
done.
If you said right now, did you hear Wes Anderson is making a movie, a gangster movie from the 30s with all children? I'd be like, yeah, that makes sense. Like, this at times feels like that.
We interrupt your commentary on tonight's exciting ball game to bring you a further bulletin of developments in the latest outbreak of hoodlum gang warfare. Police now officially state that the new weapon of devious foreign manufacture known as the splurge gun is now being widely used by the mobster gangs. We interrupt our interruption to go straight over to our reporter, Seymour Scoop.
Hier in New York passieren unvorstellbare Dinge. Es dreht sich alles um eine neue...
So, Horst, it's so dunkel with us again. New York, we brought here G-Bow.
It feels like Isle of Dogs. You're right. It has like a feeling where it's like it's an experiment in something, because I will say
I would agree with everybody. It doesn't work. I'm not saying it's good.
Yes.
But there's something about it that's very watchable.
And effective.
You know?
That's like true.
Like, when they went to go murder that one kid at the mansion and they all come with like the cream pies in their hand,
well, no,
not in the gun.
That's the most disturbing scene of the entire movie.
I took my breath away.
Like, this is the scariest thing I've ever seen.
To see like four kids crowding around one kid with a bunch of cream pies. And and that's to your point, Jason, about the direction. It's like, you've made this scene with cream pies feel like...
Oh, yeah.
Scary.
Oh, yeah. And it's because he dropped his gun?
Yes.
Right?
Oh,
it's because he dropped his gun.
Too.
What did I do, boss?
It was like the pushing on his face. That's what it was. It was like seeing the abject terror.
But they play that whole thing out in one. Like, what's crazy about it is it's really subtle in here, but there's a lot of like 1 minute takes that are being executed.
You're
by
right.
like 14 year olds or 30. I don't know how old they are actually.
No, about
but, like,
12 and 14.
They're executing takes that I'm as an adult on sets watching adults not be able to do long takes. And these kids are incorporating lip syncing, dancing. Watch it again just for a few minutes be like, oh, that's a 45 second uninterrupted moment of choreography. These kids fucking nailed.
They do nail it.
They're not incredible, but they're still doing it in a way that I was like, this is nuts. Because I was expecting this, having only heard about it and never seen it, I was expecting this to be just terrible.
Can I tell you who I think the weakest link in this whole thing is? I think Scott Baio.
Yeah. Only because he's supposed to be so charismatic, you know, and so much the kind of the like Gabriel Byrne in Miller's Crossing or a Humphrey Bogart type character, the anti-hero of the gangster movie, you know.
I think he had a charm, and now part of this is being filtered through. I was so hot for him in Charles in Charge.
Did you like the first family or the second family? I love the first family.
I like the one where the girl went on to Baywatch, Summer.
Okay, Nicole Eggert. That's the second family, yeah.
That's the second family. I don't remember the first family.
I missed out on Charles in Charge.
Really?
I think I was too old. I think I think the slight age difference between me and you guys is Charles in Charge.
Okay, absolutely. Because that was you know? A big show. I mean, Willie Ames, Nicole, I mean, it was like, I love that
Eggert,
show.
She was the most beautiful woman.
See, Willie
in the world.
Ames, I know from Eight is Enough.
Okay.
And
that's
an
a little
man.
Bit before me. Yeah, that I don't. That's I didn't really see Eight is Enough.
Yeah,
I never saw that.
Yeah. So that's it. That's the difference then.
I think Scott Baio has a charm, but I think, this feels terrible to heap this kind of judgment on a child, but I feel like who he was playing opposite, Blousy Brown.
I mean, Blousy Brown should have been Jody, right? I mean,
That was the thing. I think we didn't need the Blousy character. I think the Jody character, kind of like Marcia Gay Harden in Miller's Crossing, should be between Bugsy and Fat Sam. Like, I think she should be the lead, but in the role she's currently doing, not like the new girl in town, like Blousy is. I think that the story should be inside of the gang world rather than having an outside character
who just wants to move
singer.
To Hollywood and be a singer, but she doesn't seem to, like, we don't really get to see her talent. Like, Tallulah has that amazing song, but we, like, oh, by the way, when she auditions in that first moment, I laughed so hard when she gets up to stage and they're like, okay, sing, and she's just about to sing, and then all of a sudden that little girl comes and is like,
she's got star power.
That girl was so funny. See, that's where I was like, this is funny, and
I
want more
Jason.
Of this. I that want more of that, that character. I wanted more of, like, they cast some kids that were, again, they're giving enormous performances.
Yes,
but
big.
Much to your point, St. Clair, there's a version of going to see like a or considering seeing like a school play as like, oh boy. But there's also a version of it that's like, oh, this is so wonderful. There's something so compelling about these kids just going so hard for it. The same way that Wes Anderson, that Rushmore feels like when they do the plays, that's what this felt like to me.
It felt like getting stoned and going to your local like high school to watch like Anything Goes. Like, and
again, I am no longer allowed to do in LA County.
I was uncomfortable with Jody being forced to, like, and maybe she was uncomfortable. That was the only moment I didn't feel like Jody could fully lose herself, which is she knew that an adult man's voice was coming out of her mouth. It felt like, I don't know. And then she had to go and like take a kid's glasses off, you know, and it was just like, I would have been mortified as a child.
Yeah, it feels, I mean, look, she just came off a Taxi Driver, so I don't know if she has like, if she's carrying that much of like, but
holy shit. Yeah,
but,
exactly.
But,
oh my God. What a 1-2 punch to go from Taxi Driver.
Could have destroyed
to this?
Her career. It could have destroyed
must have
her
been,
career.
Oh my God.
It must have been a wild year for her.
It must have been her team actually going like, you know what? We don't know what the fuck is going to happen with Taxi Driver. Like, in this kid's movie.
Yeah, let's do
another
kid's
movie. Do a kid's movie. Yeah.
By the way, I do want to play a clip of Bugsy Malone and Jodie Foster flirting, because it is just gives you a little taste of what it is.
Yeah.
You know, you're aces, Bugsy. Oh. I've always found you kind of special.
Careful. You're racing my motor.
Oh, come on, Bugsy. Give a girl a break.
Are you sure you got the right fella?
You're not like all those other saps.
No?
No. Got lovely brown eyes.
There'll be lovely black eyes if Fat Sam catches us.
How about smearing my lipstick?
Careful, Tallulah. You come any closer, I have to call my lawyer.
Because I thought they had great, that's my point. I think Scott, off of Jody, and again, she's elevating everybody.
Yes.
I think they,
like Joni elevated Chachi.
Oh my God.
That's right.
Jody elevated Chachi and Joni. There is something about this movie that I was really thinking about. We talked about the splooge guns or the splurge guns, which as that give you the cream pies. What were they doing before was my big question. Like,
they were just throwing pies.
Before the guns.
So Fat Sam's crew is at a disadvantage because they don't have these new guns. And these guns, for those who haven't watched the movie, look like Tommy guns. But instead of firing bullets, they fire like, you know, a handful
shots of cream pie.
Yeah. Or whipped cream, rather. Yes. So and that is meant to be the bullets that they are raining down on the bad guys. And what's happened is Dapper Dan, again, Dapper Dan's introduction shot is a one-er, and it starts on a girl doing a puzzle, okay?
Yes.
It widens out to include, like, the room with people in it. It widens out to reveal that Dapper Dan is in a barber chair getting his
my God.
And yeah. I was like, this is a great character introduction shot for a child who has a mustache. Like, what is happening?
By the way,
in
I bought
movie?
The mustache. I believe the mustache.
Yes.
Like, that's like,
some
by the way, it was
the mustaches
done the right way.
Were drawn on, but some I believe these guys were maybe able to grow a little something. Do you
some
think?
Some seem to be.
And they kind of colored it in a little bit, like when you're losing your hair on
set.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think some of them did. I agree with Jess. Some of them seemed real, if not just very good fakes, because they were, a couple of them looked very good.
Yeah.
Do you think that this was a hormonal, like, crazy, I kind of imagine.
Oh, interesting.
I kind of imagine, only because I knew somebody who was an extra on Pirates of the Caribbean, and they said that it was a nonstop fuck fest. It was a Caribbean fuck fest. So, like, after
Are all adults, though.
Exactly. After they yelled cut, it was just like everybody.
A bacchanal.
Everybody getting it each way. Now, these kids are only 12 or 13, but I imagined it like when you go. But what I'm saying is, remember when you would go to like your Washington, D.C., like overnight, you just
they
couldn't
put
believe
tape on the
it.
Door. They,
that's
like, that's
right.
what we would do on our hotel room so you couldn't get out.
Sure.
Did I tell you that I ran?
No.
Okay. So
this is
when,
not good.
No, this is but actually, this
I,
is actually
I can't
better.
Wait to see where this is going.
Okay. So when on our Washington, D.C., DC trip, I decided that I would run a movie theater in my room, and I rented a movie, an R-rated movie, and I charged kids $5 a head to come into my hotel room.
So smart.
Paul, if this was the gold rush, I always say, Paul is not one of the assholes, like, panning for gold. He's the one setting up that motherfucking general store and then collecting.
Yeah.
It was a great movie. And then they had to clear us all out. But it was like, kids got to see an R movie. I got a bunch of money.
Wait, how much money did you make?
I mean, I don't remember it offhand, but every kid was giving me $5 as they came into the room.
Do you remember what movie you screened?
It was Beverly Hills Cop 2.
It was a great day. I 100% would have done that.
Yeah. Did your dad?
Paid for it. Yeah.
Did your dad help you procure the film? Was
no,
he involved
it was hotel
in the setup?
Pay-per-view.
Oh, I see.
So I clicked hotel pay-per-view.
Even better.
Yeah, and then I was like,
anybody could have done it. You just hosted.
Yeah, that's all
right.
I did.
That's,
oh wow! Oh
that's
wow!
Cashier.
I'm picturing you traveling to DC with a VCR in your suitcase.
No. I mean, by the way, at a certain point, I did do things like that. I had to have that VCR with me. Come
of
on,
of course.
But you know what I love too, Paul, is at that age, most people are like, okay, how can I like go to second base with somebody? Like I'm in a hotel, and all you're thinking about is how can I like turn a profit?
But by the way, about creating a party. It was creating a party atmosphere too. Like I created a party, and then I also made some money off of it too. Like it was a few things at play, you know.
Oh my God!
Because no one was gonna give us any grief before bedtime. If
did
we
you
all
let
in the same room.
Kids from other schools in, or was it just
it was
your
only,
friends?
I mean, I only knew our school as being in Washington, D.C. So, like we were on our hotel floor, and that was it.
I didn't know if it got around, and it was like, ooh, no, there's kids from other schools.
Oh, no. I that was only our room, and then I also was one of the only kids to figure out that the connecting doors did not fall under the like the tape.
So you could get to each other like a warren of rabbits.
At least two rooms.
Like a warren of rabbits.
Yeah, like Watership Down.
Yeah.
But anyway, exactly. I imagine that this was a blast for these kids to shoot, is what I imagine. Because normally you're the only kid actor and like you've got rules.
Right.
And
so these are all kids and they're probably shooting quick days.
Because they would have to. I also thought what was very interesting was the kids all did look old timey.
They did
a good job making them all look not at all contemporary. Like they looked old timey in a very funny way. I enjoyed like that they built to scale old like 30s era like cars around bike. Like Flintstone style around bike pedals.
That
every time there was a car chase or whatever, it's kids jumping into old, you know, T model or Ford Model Ts or whatever, but they are pedaling bikes. And everything is to their scale. And they go out into the woods, just like Miller's Crossing. They go out into the woods to kill somebody, to have a showdown, and they bring their bike cars all out into. I was like, this is fucking crazy.
By the way, the bike cars could go up to 10 miles an hour, and it seemed like they were having so much fun. My favorite moment of business, and again, watching this movie for the business in the background is way more appealing. Like when one of the people gets out of the like limo cars, like the driver immediately gets out, takes out like a little rag and starts like wiping down the car.
I mean,
like,
that's
like,
genius.
Yes, genius. By the way, I do want to just tell you a couple things about these kids. I just found it out. Their average age was 12.
Perfect.
There were six teachers that were all running the school, and actually one of the teachers wrote a paper about it. Her name was Lynn Simon, and apparently a bunch of people wrote papers on this movie because a chief local welfare officer visited the set every day check and inspect the correct procedures were being adhered to, and also wrote a paper. Scott Baio didn't want to do the movie, but they cast him anyway. But they said that the official paperwork to allow the children to work on the movie was mountainous. Every child actor had to have an individual medical exam and a work permit. More than 33 English councils were involved, as well as bureaucracy in New York and Los Angeles. So, and there was like a whole rivalry between the UK kids and the UK kids. And like, so this is like a lot of,
Was this shot in
London? In Pinewood. Yeah.
It was?
So some of these kids are doing American accents.
Yes.
30s era American accents. Mm-hmm. Okay, now you're straight up blowing my mind.
Yeah.
I don't want to take anything away from our love of Dapper Dan, because I do believe he is like existing in a very, very detailed backstory, and he has all that work, character work done. But his accent was a little here and there. It was kind of like
I thought Dapper Dan was
one of the best because he was playing it down.
Like
I thought Dapper Dan was like Italian at first, from Sicily.
Can we drop Dapper Dan's
speech at the end of the movie to his men when they're about to enter Fat Sam's? He gives his men a speech that is so good. Let's put that in here.
Right, gang. I don't have to tell you how important this is to me. This is the caper that's going to take the lid off of City Hall. This is the big one.
The big one.
The shakedown.
The shakedown.
The payoff.
The payoff.
And I tell you, it's got to be good. It's got to be neat. And it's got to be quick.
It's got to be good. It's got to be neat.
Quick, repeat, and have a nice say, will ya? You shouldn't have any trouble. Just the Fat Sam and a few dancehall girls. Okay, good luck, and off we go.
I also love the scene where Fat Sam's crew is sneaking up on people and they're all crouched down hiding, and they do that long tracking shot against like, get babyface. And they go all the way down to get babyface. And he goes, hey, wait a minute, I'm babyface. And he's like a little kid.
And then the kid goes, now I'm a movie star.
Yeah.
Like the kid says, I'm a movie star. And then there's a couple moments in this movie that are meta, like that I thought was so funny. Because at one point, Fat Sam says like, read the subtitles. And the kid's like, that's beta. Like, I'm like, there are moments that happen.
That's crazy.
There's a couple of other ones.
Yeah, the little moments.
There's a couple of little ones, yeah.
because I thought when he was saying I'm going to be a movie star, it's because it's his baby face's time to shine. Like everyone's going to all eyes on him. I didn't think he was talking about the movie.
And he does, all babyface does is sneak up and hit somebody with a baseball bat.
And then runs.
It's not like he's like, he's allowed to approach because he's babyface. He just hides, then runs out and hits someone with a baseball bat.
They didn't need babyface for this job unless he's so fast.
Nope.
But then they have like 15 guys locking a door. Like they're all like, we close the door, we lock them in. And then they get those splurge guns, which, oh my God, those, I want a splurge gun. I mean, when Knuckles dies
from the makeshift.
I think you have one.
I think every man is
born with a splurge gun.
Well, when Knuckles dies from his own splurging, that really made me sad. Self-splurge.
But again, like Fat Sam being so sad that Knuckles, that he led to his own best friend's demise, was very, and the shot from above of Fat Sam going, can somebody help me? You know, and nobody's there. Like he's done this.
He's lost his whole crew, and Knuckles was the last one.
By the way, just to talk about this splurge gun, I know I have a lot of like weird facts about this, but this is amazing. And Nate Kiley found a lot of great stuff here. They were trying so hard to figure out how to shoot a gun, like how to shoot kids, and they couldn't really do it. So they had these wax balls filled with cream, but they hurt people when they were fired. So like, I guess he tried it out on this 300-pound man, and they fired him. It hit him in the forehead, knocking him off his feet and leaving a huge red mark due to the velocity of it. So the kids were never hit with anything.
It's like you see kids shooting and then you see kids getting hit by something, but not in the same shot.
They could never figure out how to fire projectiles that would hit children on screen.
The movie is I'm going to jump ahead to where you, because you ask us this at the end of every episode, Paul, would you recommend this? Absolutely, you have to watch this. This is a fever dream.
That's right.
This is a fever dream of a movie. This is absolute insanity. This is the commitment to detail and it's the tension created by the commitment to detail of making the best possible homage to 1930s gangster movies, but the restrictions that it comes against by casting all 12-year-olds is just hysterical and incredible.
Well, and
it's really amazing.
I really want to, like, I guess I'm thinking about this now and I go, what you said, Jason, about Wes Anderson. Like, if Wes Anderson made this right now, it would be a
huge
critical darling.
It would be it would win the Palme d'Or.
It would.
And you know what? And the truth is like, this is, like, Alan, you know, like, this director, we said, like, he's...
Alan Parker.
Alan Parker, Fame, Midnight Express, Pink Floyd, The Wall, you know, Angel Heart, Mississippi Burning. Like, he...
Angel Heart. Keep in mind, this is a man who makes one of, like, the most sexual erotic thrillers of the 80s.
An X-rated movie. I mean, but, like, there is something about him where you're like... Like, yeah, like, if anyone was going to pull this off, it would be him. Like,
what we're saying, he did pull it off.
And you know what?
Pulled it off.
And to Jessica, to your point, Blousy was recast because she got too tall. So that girl was not the original Blousy.
No disrespect. To who played Blousy. I'm sure if she stayed in the business, I'm sure she developed into a perfectly wonderful actor.
I'm going to find out right now.
A lot of kid actors are being pushed into this against their will, mind you.
Yeah.
You know,
it's also a very tough thing. This isn't just a performance. This is like a period performance with singing and a lot of intense choreography. And this was a lot. You know, this was a lot. That's kind of what I'm saying. This was a lot for all of them. Not to call anybody out, but all of these actors are coming up against restrictions that are the difficulty of what exactly they're being asked to do, which is quite a bit, frankly.
It's a lot.
Dance numbers to singing to period specific dialogue and kind of like the cadence and the rat-a-tat-tat, you know, and on the homage to the characters that they're all kind of portraying versions of from that era. You know, there's a lot going on here. And I think a lot of these kids acquit themselves really well. I don't know. I'm just in the bag for this movie because I think
really are.
Because
you're
I think
all
I
in.
Thought. I think I thought because I'd heard so much about it, I think I thought it was going to be so much worse that as it was going, I was like, oh, this is actually fun. Wait a minute. This is actually well made. I got more into it than I thought I was going to be. So maybe that's why I'm liking it more. But yeah, like it I got such a kick out of like the trope of like I called in Fat Sam being like, I called in Chicago's greatest hitman, blah, blah, blah. Looney Bergonzi. And then Looney shows up and is immediately killed and he won't stop getting hit. And Bugsy Malone is like, Looney, what are you doing? And Looney's just standing there and he just keeps getting hit with cream pie after cream pie after cream pie. So funny.
I got to tell you, I'm on a page right now to say, where are they now? The cast. It's a real mixed bag. I'll just quickly tell you that Blousy decided she did not want to do acting professionally.
That makes sense.
She became a medical administrator and served in several Air Force bases. She left the military in 2001.
Yeah. And now she's an eye doctor. Blousy.
Yeah,
now
Blousy.
She's an eye doctor. That's Fat right. Sam, exactly.
Fat What's Sam appeared in the sitcom Fish, which I believe is a spinoff of Barney Miller. He stopped acting and he moved into the construction business. And then
it's
he
about
was
Abe Vigoda's character.
Yes. And then he was the director of global construction for Citigroup. However, in 2015, he pleaded guilty to bribery and was sentenced to 6 years in prison.
And All right.
Fat Sam.
Listen, is Fat Sam from New Jersey? Because I'm not
it
saying feel, that
I'm looking. I'm looking at new Fat Sam. Fat Sam looks like he should be on The Sopranos. Like the
because
new,
what yeah. I'll say is, listen. If you grew up in New Jersey, you always know somebody who They took a bribe. They didn't take a bribe. They spent some time in prison. They came out and we're all okay with it. Okay.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's not to accept a bribe in New Jersey is kind of like just going to the corner store. It's not like that big of a deal. Do you know what I mean?
I mean, yes, I totally hear. Like, I'm going to tell you one more thing that is Babyface became a very famous director, directed Eddie and the Eagle, and co-directed the Oscar-winning Freddie Mercury biop Bohemian Rhapsody. Yep,
Whoa!
And directed the Elton John movie Rocket Man.
Whoa!
So that
that's incredible.
That's Dexter
Babyface
Fletcher,
was
yeah.
Great. Yeah, Babyface
yeah,
was great.
Yeah, that's so funny.
And then,
Babyface was great.
Yeah,
love Babyface.
Fizzy, the tap dancer, no one knows what happened to Fizzy.
Oh, God. Dropped off the
Fizzy
I liked the song that like the mournful ballad that he had.
I love
where he's just sweeping up at the end of the night. I thought that was great. And then one of the dancers comes in and dances around him as
it
he's
does
singing.
A lyrical
I thought
dance?
That scene
Yeah.
I thought that scene was gorgeous. I don't know what's wrong with me today, but I was like, yes, I'm into this.
I think it's like, it's sort of like looking at, like, I don't know, miniature dollhouse, or I wouldn't go to find it, but if someone made the miniature dollhouse, I'd be like, I'm amazed at it. I wouldn't go seek it out.
Shots fired.
But you know
at the miniature dollhouse community.
I guess you just lost half your
listeners.
Oh, I know this is a lot.
Wow.
But you know what I'm saying? Like, it's like I can appreciate the artistry of it. Like that was something that I feel like because it was made professionally and with intent. And yes, the kids are going to be all over the place. It's a whole movie of kids, so it's very hard. I was
really impressed, I guess, that there were no adults.
Yes, not
like,
even
there
like
was
a,
role, no part was played by an adult. There was never an adult on screen.
Bigger kids, like there were like especially as extras, like there were some extras in the background of
the
Italian.
Boxing.
In the box.
In the boxing.
The box. We even talked about the boxing.
Oh my God, the boxing ring.
We have boxing scene.
Oh my God. Or that kid whose answer to everything is nope.
Yes.
Are you a fighter? Nope.
The lyrics in these, like I'm not, again, you know me, I don't go into miniatures and I don't go into musicals, but the musical numbers were interesting because they were very much not like what I'm feeling. It was just like what I, like there was no... as if it was just sort of like I'm saying what I'm like.
No, they were text, not subtext.
Yes, exactly.
They were just text. They are expositional almost.
Yes,
you know, they are Well, that's the thing. It's like, it's a movie about kids for kids. So they, right. I think they were like, you know what? We can't be coy about this. The songs need to be basically what they say, what they mean overtly, you know?
I mean, I do want to, yeah. I'll play a little bit of the tap dance kid singing his song.
Tomorrow, as they say, another working day and another chore. Tomorrow, an awful price to pay. I gave up yesterday, but they still want more.
So my question is, I think the biggest misstep was having adult voices for the songs.
Yes.
And so that's not on them.
I agree.
Okay.
No.
Now, the other question is, would we have done away with all the songs? Would this movie have
note.
Been more interesting note, had we just had
yes.
it be the acting?
My you know? Feeling was that I wish that this was not a musical because yeah. the songs were. And
that's
I checked out. I bet kids.
I fast forwarded
a bunch of the songs. Once yes. I got a sense of what the song was, I fast forwarded because I was like, "This is these aren't necessary." I liked to like unless they were. I liked the like Jodie Foster. I liked the songs that felt like they were part of the
right.
she's performing for the speakeasy type of, you know what I mean?
Exactly. Like
a song that feels diegetic to the moment, you know, those songs I would have been fine
yes.
with. If there was two songs in the movie because they were being sung in the speakeasy or whatever, but the other songs I did not need. And because I don't like musicals, I found them distracting. And the fact that they were being sung by adult voices.
That's very bizarre.
Took me out of it.
When that piano player played his song,
no.
I was like, that is not his voice. It's terrible. And it was, just let the kids sing. Let the kids,
because
well, I almost feel
because
like.
He was so good and he's yeah. given us so much with his face, but then we're distracted by this. Like, and it wasn't even good singing. I don't know who this gentleman is.
But to me, I think the kids would have sung worse and it would have made the movie worse. So that's why I'm saying just take the songs
out. Take the songs out.
By the way, it seems like that was, I mean, maybe coming off of Fame and like he was like, oh, I want to make, Alan Parker was like obsessed with this because at one point, like he sang the songs for the producers. The producer's like, yeah, so, you know, I think we should get you like a songwriter or something. Would you like to get
right.
a songwriter? Yeah.
Right.
So, like, that's when they brought in Paul Williams. Because like, to me, that even makes me laugh that he was so like, and then they're going to sing and dance. And then he wrote his right. own lyrics for these things. But I mean, wow. I guess
so crazy.
This is a journey that we've all gone on here with this movie. I mean, I think
I've really come around to it.
Jess, can I ask you an important question? Would
yes.
you show this to your child?
Never.
Really? I thought about it for my kids.
I was going to ask, yeah,
yeah.
if you thought your kids would enjoy it.
Listen,
What's interesting is it's trading on tropes and archetypes that your kids, I bet, don't recognize.
No,
right.
They don't
but
know.
But that we as children recognized because those movies were being parodied
like
and lampooned
watched,
already.
Yeah.
That's right.
What our parents watched, but also what Bugs Bunny was impersonating.
Like
Bugs Bunny would do gangster riffs like this, where he would make fun of Edward G. Robinson, or he would make fun of Scarface, or he would make fun of, you know, where he would those kind of tropes and those ideas were in our lexicon because they were both on TV on Saturday afternoons, you know, where you would watch old gangster movies, or you knew it from the cartoons that were using them as their inspiration that were from the 40s and
right.
50s, you know?
Well, I will tell you this much. I watched Goonies with my kids and they went bananas for it because the kids are the star of the show and that movie.
Like, yes.
And there was enough things that were adult that seemed like a little bit scary. Now, by the way, the opening of that movie was very problematic as like...
What happens in that movie?
Well,
Goonies, you mean?
Of Goonies.
Yeah.
Where
the
opening
beginning.
Scene is Robert Davi, great James Bond villain, Robert Davi, starts to hang himself in jail. So he's like,
wow,
he's committed
that's
suicide.
Tough. That's
yes.
tough
and then
for a kid to watch.
A cop comes in and the cop's like, oh my God, this guy killed himself. And then he reveals that he's not killed himself. And then he basically beats the hell out of the cop and
That's
then
tough.
Escapes. And then they're running through the town. These robbers are escaped the town. And this is the moment that really stuck out to my five-year-old. Chunk, very funny character. My kids do the truffle shuffle now. But Chunk,
oh my God.
As he grabs his milkshake, he sees this police chase and he runs up to the window, but he runs up so fast that he slams his cup into the window and it like spurts all over him. He goes, ah, shit. And then all of a sudden, my five-year-old was like, ah, shit.
Yep.
Ah, of course. Shit. So we tried not to embrace it. Like, I did everything I could not to laugh at it. But at one point, he was literally taking June's mouth and opening it and closing it like she That's was a funny. Puppet and making, saying, ah, shit.
Making your mom into a marionette is funny.
To Kurt, yes.
And making them swear. Yeah, and making them swear, because that's the only safe way to do it is to make it come out of their mouth.
That's a solid bit.
Yeah, it's
a solid bit. And we have to recognize that.
Also, we have to recognize that, yeah.
That we were raised on such fucked up adult stuff.
Yes.
And look how we turned out. You know,
good.
we keep them very,
what,
very
good. We're good. Absolutely, we're the world has never been worse.
We're doing great. Okay. We're doing great. We could find anything on HBO. At 2 o'clock
oh my God.
On a Saturday.
I remember I was watching Risky Business. I was watching Risky Business at Christmas because my parents were in the other room having dessert. I was like, no one cared about what I was watching on HBO.
Nobody cared.
This movie, I know I've been like, you know, really positive about it because I don't know. I just genuinely enjoyed watching the insanity that is this movie. Like, it was top to bottom, T to B, absolutely bananas. And I was just there for it. I was like, the version of bananas that this is, I'm here for. Like, this is, everybody's working hard. They've made it look pretty good. It is deeply bizarre and unsettling.
Yeah.
And to watch it now is even crazier than to have watched it then.
Absolutely.
But there was something I couldn't take my eyes off of it, as opposed to Dirt Bike Kid.
Yes,
or
we've watched a lot of bad
some of
kid
the recent
movies.
Some of the recent things we've, or you know, Rad, or you know, movies that I enjoyed fine for the podcast, but this I was like genuinely like, huh, what a weird, this is a weird, like, this kind of is working on me.
And it flies by. Tell you, it flies by. It's a quick, well, also because
especially
we did fast forward
in the musical number.
I will say that there was moments where I was like, I should have fast forwarded. Sometimes I'm too, I hold too true to this podcast, but I should fast forward the musical
number.
Don't,
Paul. Yeah.
Listen, it's not unspooled.
Yeah, I know.
Here's what I'll say, and this is going to sound crazy, but this movie is completely indebted to all movies you would do on Unspooled.
Absolutely.
Like, this movie is cribbing from the great 30s, 40s Hollywood gangster movies, the Howard Hawks movies. This movie is cribbing from the greats. And so that's, and Alan Parker is such a good director. I think part of what makes this movie work is that he's doing a lot of that for you.
Yeah.
You know, and then the kids part of it, again, to me just felt like a Wes Anderson weird move, which I very much enjoyed. Sorry, go ahead, Paul.
No, I was just going to say, I think we're saying it all. I mean, I was going to say that there are people out there with a different opinion, but we actually share this opinion. So now it's time for really, I mean, it's second opinions, but it really is the same opinion that you've been hearing.
The movie was a piece of shit, yet this person recommends it. Tell me, what is the message? Maybe that art is subjective. Second opinion.
So there are 80% of the reviews here are 5-star reviews. 5% are only 1-star review. And I'll just read a couple of them. They're very quick. Peter Rodriguez says, saw this as a child. Loved it. Scott Baio ended up being a complete douchebag, but this is a great movie with children acting as adults. Very well done. 5 stars.
Fine.
Yeah, fine. Yes. You know, he calls out the elephant in the room. And then this is the one I just like, and I don't know if I'll be able to communicate it, but the capitalization on this is my favorite. Yeah, it's Kirch McConnellog, wrote this in 2019. I loved it when my kids were little in the 80s, and I loved it again last night. Perfectly acceptable for little kids. The guns shoot pie! and the and the cars are pedal powered. 5 stars.
Yeah, I get it, man. You're talking my language.
I mean, and then it goes, this is
a, so there was a brief period in the early in the movie where I thought the guns were shooting eggs and I didn't like it.
No, oh, that's your worst nightmare. I mean,
that would be the worst.
Yeah. You'll probably have that nightmare tonight.
And this is a weird one here, too, which is from Charles. Not Charles who's in charge, but just regular Charles. An old favorite of mine. I passed this on to my girlfriend's 10-year-old. He had a hard time getting into it, but he enjoys it now. Wow. Like,
great stepdad.
Yeah. Like, you will like this. You will like this.
That's a tough
Gavin.
Entry. I don't think I choose that.
We're going to rewatch it. You didn't like the first time. We're going to rewatch it. You're going to like it. Trust me. You're going to like this.
And I do believe that there's something about Alan Parker where he thought maybe he could have made a whole series of these movies.
Like, did he make Fame prior to this or after this? I didn't look what year this
was.
I
got to see what date Fame is. Fame came
out. It's okay. Don't worry about it. It's not that important.
No, but Fame came out in 1980. So this is so followed this, right? Because this movie comes out earlier than that.
You know what was a great scene too? Remember the barbershop kid? The details of the barbershop guy is cutting the hair, and then he closes the door and they turn on the water.
Yep, he turns up the music.
Yeah. Oh, when he turns the water. The chair.
It was elegantly done.
Yes.
Elegantly
that's what I'm
done.
Saying. That's what
You're
I'm saying. He
right.
puts the hot towel over his face and then he just opens him up to the murder.
And there are some things where they cheat, but it still made me laugh. Like when they drive their pedal car through the barn and they only shoot the exterior of the barn and they come out covered in hay and chickens.
Yes.
I liked
smart.
It. I liked it. I
There's
liked
like
it.
Lots of funny, smart stuff. And especially I enjoyed, even though it's very bizarre, that they're trying to do all the tropes of gangster movies, including exactly like the barbershop hit, like all these murders, like the cold open is a murder, and that they are kids portraying
adults.
Gangland murders.
Yes. You know,
like, that's very funny to me.
I mean, and let's just call it out. Like, the end of this movie is a complete massacre. By the rules of the movie, everyone in this movie dies. And there's like we wipe off our face and we smile at the end, really? Like, it's like they're moving still, but the movie, like,
well,
the plot wise.
Don't Scott Baio and Blousey get away?
Oh, yes, they do get away, yeah.
Can I ask, though, because I know it's a love fest for this movie, but end, I was like, what?
People are
going to
be so annoyed.
By the way, now I
swung you guys in my favor.
This is Jason, though, to me. If Jason's like, you know what? I'm like, yes, it is really good. Like, I may get off this call and say, like, what the fuck was I thinking?
You're
going
to say to Dan,
movie.
Like, you know, and Dan's going to be like, are you insane?
Yes, yes. No, and I, but so, and
we
listen,
appreciate the artistry. I mean, I think you'd have to be, you like, what we, like,
in the, I'm putting it in the rubric of what we do and watch. You know what I mean?
Yes.
What we are forced to do and watch. And it is just, it's so much more interesting to me to have watched this than so much of the other stuff we're forced to watch. Sorry, go ahead, Jeff.
I didn't hate you, Paul. I never really blame Jason for the movies. Mm-hmm. I blame you. And
I
hate you
fine.
During it because I think I'm a tired mother. You know,
yes,
I don't have a lot of me time and I'm forced to watch this shit, you know, with the trash can fires, et cetera. I did not feel that way about you. I'm annoyed with you for other reasons, but
sure,
not
of course.
That.
We'll get into it. A deep dive issues.
But I wanted to ask, though, about the end, because in the logic of this film, I thought that when you get cream pied, you're dead. Okay. So then everyone gets dead and then everyone just decides to not be dead and to get along. Like I didn't understand what were we learning.
I think I agree with you. I think for the most of the movie, we understand that if you get cream pied via either gun or a thrown actual pie, you are quote unquote dead. You are when all of Fat Sam's guys get double crossed and get murdered, they don't come around anymore because they're dead.
Right.
You know, but that we don't ever see so that the final massacre where the whole speakeasy erupts in everybody's got splurge guns. Everybody else has regular cream pies. So they're just splurging and cream pieing and splurging and cream pieing all over the place. And it just turns into a fun food fight.
Well,
the vibe.
But I think
the vibe is like it's a final song and it's a food fight.
But the truth is, plot wise, the story is and they all die. But they can't do a movie where all the children die. So they have to all just be like, and we are all, and you know what? This was all pretend. We had a good time. This is a pretend thing.
So
that's what it felt like. I realized there's a radio broadcast happening, but I think I was tuning out by then because it was you know, I was like, yeah, oh, I don't know what this is.
Yeah, because I think, and I do think maybe, I mean, maybe I'm giving too much to this movie, but I think maybe the point was, can't we all get along like kids? Should we learn something as adults from how these kids have learned to put aside
their differences? Yeah, maybe we shouldn't be killing each other with guns. Yes. We should be having food fights instead.
Right, as the 11-year-old dressed as like a Cossack priest says, like, drop your cream pie and shake hands instead, you know?
Yeah.
I think that was, maybe that's what it was about, but I was surprised by the ending.
Well, we learned a lot here. We learned a lot about each other. We learned a lot about this film. I don't think we even need to ask the question, will we recommend it? Because I think we've talked about it ad nauseum. You know, wow. I mean, what a thrill. What a thrill.
Jodie Foster's like Star Is Born. Like, just watch see that. Like raw talent in the wild.
Yes. Watch it, because here's the other thing is, and you mentioned Goonies, Paul, but Goonies exists in a world in which there are adults.
Absolutely.
This movie, again, exists in a world in which the kids are the adults. There are no adults. I can't name another movie that exists like that. I can't tell you a movie that has children only in it and posits a world in which there are no adults. This is the only world.
Yes.
So that, to me, is... That, from a starting point, is bizarre and interesting. Like, that's that I found, like, just as a concept, kind of fascinating. You know?
I love it. And Jess, I'm so excited that you were here with us to talk about it. Anything that you want to
hear on Unspool?
Anything that you want to talk about, Jess? Like, what do you want to tell people about?
I would love for everyone to tune into The Deep Dive, our new podcast that I have with June that Paul continually tries to be a part of, to creep in, surprise us.
Get
his name mentioned. It's like can't stop
Gotta
making
get in
himself
there. Gotta get in
the
there.
Focus. So if you want to hear about Paul's home life.
Oh, you're going to hear a lot about stuff. You're going to hear about cans. You're going to hear about my gift giving. You're going to hear a lot of stuff.
Yeah, you're going to hear a lot about it. So, yes, please hop over to The Deep Dive. You know, just check it out. I think even people who listen to your podcast who think, God, that's definitely not for me, give it a shot. Because I think we're going to find that post-pandemic or whatever we're in right now, we're wanting to feel some things. Okay,
I agree,
authentic feelings.
I really agree. I agree. It's a great show. It's a great show.
Okay.
Jason, what do you got?
I'll promote the new upcoming Star Trek animated show called Prodigy that I'm one of the voices on. It's coming on Nickelodeon soon, if not already. I'm not sure when this drops, but I'll throw that out there. And then I'll mention as well Ultra City Smiths on AMC, Steve Conrad's new show that I also stop motion animation show that I also am a small part of. That's a fantastic show. I'm going to shout out just two quick podcasts that I did recently. I was a guest on Mallory Rubin's show, The Ringerverse, and Jason Concepcion's new show called X-Ray Vision, both of which are fantastic.
I'm so excited you are on that.
Pop culture.
Yes. Oh.
So good. Both two of my favorite people to talk to about pop culture, about Star Wars, Marvel. We're talking about everything that we love, that we're watching, reading, listening to. Both of them are phenomenal. So check out those two shows, The Ringerverse and X-Ray Vision.
Awesome. I'll just quickly promote Star Trek Lower Decks, a show that I'm doing on Paramount Plus. I play essentially the chief engineer on that show, and there's a great story about my character and the fact that he has never had sex, and that's a full episode.
Where do a deep dive,
yes. if you will.
It's a very funny episode, and I won't even spoil who my mother is, but it's somebody that you will all enjoy as you watch it. I will let you enjoy that for yourself, and I want to talk about this one thing. I think it's really cool. I mentioned this on the mini episodes as well, but this is a really cool new service. It's called blackfilmarchive.com, and it's basically this amazing website that has these like historically and culturally significant films made from 1915 to 1979 about black people by black people that have really been lost. And so this has been this archive that has been building by these amazing creators to kind of get these films back into some sort of availability, streaming, and there's cultural context to each one of them. It's really, really cool. So that is just at blackfilmarchive.com.
That's awesome.
Cool.
All right. So thank you so much for listening. A big thank you to our producer, Cody, our engineer, Devin, our MVP, Molly, our movie producer who picks everything, Avril Halley, for pulling this out. And I have to give a tip of the hat to Paul F. Tompkins, who recommended this movie a long time ago. And I texted him while I was watching it and said, I think this movie would be up your alley. And he goes, I recommended this movie to you. So so there you go.
And then Nate cream-pied you.
He did. He cream-pied me and my whole family.
Oh, boy. And again, St. Clair. You're going to need to look up the definition of that later.
You don't need it. I'm in London right now, and I'm fairly certain cream pie means a different thing over here, but it's probably nasty.
It's probably just as illegal in both places.
I will also just give a shout out to our researcher, Nate Kiley, and say head over to our t-shirt store because I guess we have to get that t-shirt up. And a big thank you to everybody, Earwolf. And if you want to hear these shows commercial-free, you can sign up at Stitcher to hear the whole archive. And that's everything because we only keep unlimited number out behind the paywall. Tune in next week for a mini episode where you can come and dispute that we think this movie is great. You give me a call at 619-PAULASK. That's 619-PAUL-ASK. Remember to rate and review the show. Thank you very much, Jessica. Thank you, Jason. We'll see you next time. Bye for now. How did this get made?